A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hey, what's happening, Rush Nation? It is Thursday. We are back in the house. I did promise this guest last week. No stocks, unfortunately. I'm going to take the L on this one. I did not realize that daylight savings time had occurred in the United States. And so Stocks says his parents' evening, so he sends his apologies. But that's okay. As promised, I'm never alone. And I have a phenomenal guest and a very good friend of mine here. We've just been chatting off stage. That's why we're probably a little bit late, but it's still really early compared to when we normally record. And I've got here the lead fantasy analyst from The Score, Fantasy Pros' most accurate expert for 2019, including a load of straight top seven finishes before he decided to just showcase his rankings on his own because people are searching for them everywhere. And he's a Buffalo Bills sufferer and the coolest and most famous Canadian since Ryan Reynolds. It's Justin Boone. Welcome to 5 Yard. Once again, great to have you back. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me. I appreciate the lesson in daylight savings time that you gave me. I did not realize that it was not the same everywhere. So you were explaining to me all the intricacies of that. So not just learning fantasy stuff from you, right? Like we're learning all about everything. Everything else that's going on in the world, on top of the fact that, I mean, we're going up against the NCAA tournament today in America. So I don't know how many viewers we might lose to that, but they can obviously watch a replay. And unfortunately for me, I haven't really paid too much attention to the NCAA tournament for a couple of years as I've gone further down the NFL rabbit hole. My love of other sports has dropped off a little bit. But yeah, I'm always excited to come on and talk to you, whether it be here or whether it be in our, you know, different chats and the leagues that we're in together. We have our International Dynasty League that's still going strong. That
hurt me last year.
Yeah. What's that?
I said that hurt me last year because I made a massive push to go all in and then lost all my quarterbacks and running backs very quickly in that league.
Yeah, it happens. In the Fantasy Pros Dynasty League, I did something similar where I traded a couple first to get Tyreek Hill, thinking that was going to put me over the top. And then I had my worst week of the season in the semis and put up a massive total in the final, but the final I was not in. So we know how that goes. But yeah, that league is super fun. A lot of great analysts from the U.S. and from all around the world. Mexico and Brazil and France and a couple from the UK. So yeah, I hope we can keep that one going because it's been fantastic.
Yeah, all day long. I do enjoy it. It is a good fun league. And you're in the international portions. It's half international, half US. International wasn't as strong this year, but next year I feel like it's going to be a good year for the international analysts.
Yeah, I took a 1 year or rebuild. I almost made the playoffs still actually in the first year of that rebuild, but yeah, I'm looking forward to this season. I have the first overall pick based on a trade that I had made a couple years ago, so didn't even finish last and still have that 101, so very excited to see what I can do with that.
It's just like the Bears in that situation.
And yeah, exactly,
follow the same trend and take Caleb Williams.
Probably take the same player too. Yeah.
Oh man, I love Dynasty and I love for all of that goodness that comes out of it and all the trades. But as you say, really fun league. And yeah, you're doing a great job with it. It's on Sleeper as well now, which I think makes it I didn't actually vote for it. I was happy with it on MFL, but you know, the cool kids
the
like
transition
the cool
from MFL to Sleeper is the only thing that took a little while. I had to you know, pour a drink a couple times and sit there and manually transfer all the rosters over last off season. That took a bit of time, but yeah, it's also helped. The chat's been great, and the chat function that's in Sleeper there, where everybody can just talk and, you know, throw trades out and everything. It's made it a lot easier. And yeah, we were outvoted. I also wanted to keep MFL, but happy now that we're on Sleeper.
Yeah, no, it's great. So you've just pointed me to a pain that I have. So I run a really fun league, which I call the Ultimate Fantasy Champion League, UFC. And I took it home this year. I'm glad, because that belt was missing from my collection. There's two of the like three leagues I run that I hadn't won since inception, and I won two of them this year. That was one, and the 5-year rush champion, the champions. I was like, got in it every year and never got in it. So that's like a 2-year. You got to win one of the list of leagues to get in the champion of champions, and then you got to take home the champion of champions trophy. So a guy brought that home. But the UFC is it's four fantasy formats in the season.
Okay.
So they basically 4-week segments, except for the last one where that continues from week 12 to week 17. So that one's 5 weeks, but everything else is 4 weeks. And they're different formats. So the first one is a franchise flex frenzy. You familiar with that format?
No.
So you draft, there's two drafts. The first draft is a team draft from where you can draw fantasy players from. And there's two copies of each. You're in a 12 or 14 team league. This one's a 14 team. So then you've ended up got basically 64, 32 times two teams that you pick from. Yeah. So the first draft is you go 5 rounds and you select the teams. Now, if you select both portions of that, so say you're on the turn and you go Buffalo Bills, Buffalo Bills, you select both portions, you can effectively lock out the Buffalo Bills, and you can basically lock out. And therefore, you don't effectively have to draft them. So your other selections, you can draft up. So the we ruin ADPs because people bills, and then Josh Allen doesn't get drafted because you don't need to. You just
right.
Or you draft him with like your last pick. So you might pick like Buffalo Bills. You might have Washington, the Jets, and Houston, for example. And so you're taking like Aaron Rodgers at like the 101 or whatever it might be. So it's interesting, because then your next draft is then your player draft, and you've got to watch who the other people are who have the other copies of the franchise you're drafting against.
You got to be mindful of all of it. Yeah.
It was a big strategy piece, because you're thinking, well, okay, I might typically go with Mahomes if I had the Chiefs, but you might be against the guy who has like the Chargers, and you could miss out on two players there, and you've got to kind of map.
I love it.
It's a wild format, but it's great. And then we do an IDP section, then a Superflex tight end premium section, and they're all brand new drafts. So literally, you scrap your team after 4 weeks, you redraft from the third week. We do reverse standings.
Oh, that's wild.
It's awesome though, because it means you're like always got something to play for, and it's all play. So okay. You know, so it's no head-to-head format, and you get schedule luck. It's all play. So you could be completely out of it after 8 weeks, have completely whiffed on franchise flex and IDP, thinking they're not my strong points, and then can absolutely crush it on Superflex, Titan Premium, and then just standard PPR and win the belt. So you got to maintain. You've got to be kind of good at each section. But if you peak too soon, then you're picking too far at the back in the others. So if you end up like top after 8 weeks, you're at the back section, and therefore you're going to lose players, and it gets wild.
I love it. I love hearing about all kinds of different leagues, right? Like I have friends that are in really intricate salary cap leagues, and you know, that are dynasty leagues essentially, but with these salary caps and these contracts, and they'll ask me questions about it. It's like, I don't even have a clue. I've never even heard of a league. Like, you know what I mean? Like that has these weird contracts that run for years, and you got to lock different players in, and it makes the values totally change. So Yeah, it's fun, but even some of them I hear about, I'm just like, I don't know, that might be a little bit much even for me. Like, I'm locked into the leagues that I'm in now. If anything, I feel like I've been dropping leagues year to year versus, you know, adding more crazy ones like that.
So I just like really high strategy leagues. So leagues where you're up against either great people and it's real like deep thinker kind of people, analyst leagues or type things, or just really wacky formats that your in-season adjustment is what makes you win. So where you have to read the format, and that's why I think love things like the Scott Fishbowl, because it's not the scoring is in such a way you have to have a read on it. And you can look at a team and they do those silly rankings at like the beginning of the season of the Scott Fishbowl.
Yeah.
And people think your team absolutely stinks. And actually, if you've read the game right, you'll go against consensus and actually you'll go quite deep. So I love leagues like that. Like the Champions of Champions League that we have last year, I'm going to keep the same format, was no free agency. Instead, it was 2 week supplemental drafts. So there was no free agency, reverse standings. So the first 2 weeks was random draw. And then every 2 weeks was reverse standings, supplemental draft. So those at the bottom would therefore have first picks on the players. But then you also had to make decisions. Benches were really thin, so you only had a couple of spots. So you had to decide when Justin Jefferson went down, do I hold Justin Jefferson or do I cut him? And so someone cut him, and I picked him up, and I stashed him for 7 weeks. But then he went off in the final, and it was like it paid off. But I had to take some medium-term hits through that. And then the other part that we added to it was, there was a few other intricate details I won't go into, was we added what's called like a coin, like a time machine coin.
Okay.
You got three in the regular season. And basically, after Monday Night Football, but before, so you had a four-hour window between Monday Night Football and when you could play this coin to change a player in your lineup. So if someone like a Gabe Davis went off on your bench, you could make that move. And but you, no one could see it except for me as a commissioner, and I had a assistant commish who would do that for me and my opponent, so I couldn't influence play. So you could set a coin, but your opponent might set a coin. You could end up being crossed out, and you've got three in the season, so you have to think when you use it. And then it's also not just head to head, it's league medium. So that was your other game in the week. So some people would use it just to beat the medium and pick up an extra, just to pick up the one win. Some would wait until you got the two, but then you might be in situations where the benches are so thin you could wait. And some people hoarded their coins until the end, and then they had no reason to play him because they were getting beat by 20, 30 points.
But just in case, I kept it until the end. Yeah, I was I was in a league at the Score that we had years ago where it was sort of loosely based around like the Premier League, where there was more than just like the main league. The main league was going on, but then there would be like side cups or side challenges along the way. And then if you won some of those, some of them were built around like almost like WWE style things. Like so one was called Survivor Series, and it was, I think it was like the lowest score got dropped every week, but it had no impact on the main league. It was just happening on the side. And then there was something like you're saying, where one of the challenges, if you wanted, it was like a money in the bank situation where you could swap a player out. It was called Monday in the Bank, I think. And you could swap a player out on Monday. Yeah. But a lot of time spent by the commish, which was not me, organizing that league and coming up with a lot of great ideas. And that was an extremely fun one. I find now for me, like just the barest of bones, the most simple thing. But when it's dynasty, I want the deepest of deep benches. And when it's redraft, I want the smallest benches, like you're talking about, where like it makes those decisions so difficult, where you can't just stash some of these backup running backs, and now bye weeks hit and you drafted a few guys that have the same bye week, and now your team's decimated. You got to change some guys out and drop some guys that are valuable. Whereas dynasty, to me, I love being in these analyst leagues that are extremely deep, 14 teams. I'm in one where it's like 34 man rosters or something. and there's nothing on the waiver wire, and the battles for just the crumbs that are left over on the waiver wire. I picked up Corey Davis the other day because it's like, that's how bad it is. Like, there's just nothing on the waiver wire that you could possibly want. And the odd time a guy will pop up and then everyone bids a max bid to try and get him. So it's it makes it really, really fun. And you get to see some of the same names. Danny Kelly, who's in the International League, is in that one with me. And we always joke about we're the two guys that are always battling for these like bottom of the barrel players. And yeah, it just depends who's got the waiver priority. Nobody wants to spend the money, but you try to battle for who can get that $0 bid higher. Yeah. So it's really, really fun. And yeah, I love all the different leagues that have all the different intricacies and switching it up, even though, like I said, it's tough sometimes to give advice on those leagues when people are asking on Twitter. And right. Then, you know, you need that full explanation. You need 10 more tweets just explaining all the details of the league and the rules and whatnot. And yeah, it takes a long time to answer some of those questions.
Oh, it really does, doesn't it? You sit there and you're like, people ask you, like, why do you need to know that? It's like, because the strategy part of it is really crucial to it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the same. You can't. And like, people go, like, they provide you the scoring now, which is better. At least people are getting better at providing the scoring before they ask, which is good. But yeah, then there's actually like, well, what style of league? Because you might pick up a player and it might impact your bench and everything else. So yeah, I love the deep thinking. I love the leagues where you take more of the luck element out of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Like you're saying, because I think
it's always going to be an element, right?
Well, It doesn't. But like, I just think people, I like it where you've got to make bold plays. You can't just hedge. Like, you've got to commit to a strategy one way or the other. And if it works and you nail it, then kudos to you, deserve it. I hate it every year when people bemoan luck and like people go, I drafted so-and-so in the first round. And it's like, it is part of it, but it's also, it's not luck. It's how you mitigate that. Like, you've got to go in the game knowing that these injuries are going to happen. We've seen, and I'm writing a piece for the playbook about the increase of injuries year on year. And it's something like there's 50% more injuries that affect fantasy football performance on average across the board just over the last 3 years. So when that happens, it's like, it is baked in now. Like, injuries to running backs, quarterbacks, that it's baked in. Like, if you're going in taking a player and you haven't mitigated the what if they get injured part of that equation, that's not luck. Yes, of course, you'd be in a better position if that player was healthy. But we saw in fantasy football last year, people were making fantasy football playoffs with, you know, streaming quarterbacks that were sort of undrafted, and a lot of undrafted or very lowly drafted players were winning leagues last year.
I won a dynasty title a couple of years ago where I had Joe Burrow as my main quarterback in a super flex league. And I think my second quarterback got hurt and I just had to cycle through. Like, we're talking like the Nick Mullins of the world. Like, it was just each week a quarterback would get hurt. I'd grab the backup and I'd play that guy and he would just get me, you know, 15 points or 12 points, just enough. And then I kept going through and I managed to win a title doing that for like half a season, I think, at the end of the year. It did help. I think I had Geno Smith at one point. He started for Russ when Russ was hurt with the Seahawks and he had like 4 or 5 games. So that got me through a little stretch. But in the fantasy playoffs that year, it was the Nick Mullins of the world and I forget who else, but it was rough and I still managed to pull out the title. So but luck definitely is a huge factor. Like you mentioned in the National Dynasty League that, you know, all your quarterbacks go down and there's just nothing you can do. You can't even like, you know, plan around that. You can't have 5 or 6 quarterbacks that are going to be starter, you know, starter quality on your bench.
I did.
So sometimes it just falls apart.
Yeah. I mean, I did have enough. So at least I had 5 quarterbacks that were playing. So at least I mitigated the risk. I still made the playoffs and the semis, but just didn't get any further than that. It's right. What cost me the title, but I still, like, I think I made a trade for Stafford as my QB4 and people went and it was still quite probably a slight overpay. And I remember the reaction was, well, that seems steep to pay Stafford. Why did you need him for a 4th QB? And I went, hey, you never know. And actually I ended up, And then I lost Stafford, and luckily I spent all my fab bucks on Carson Wentz, who ended up backing him up.
Well, now I'm going to be in that league. I'm going to be in that position because if I do take Caleb Williams at one overall, I have Josh Allen in that league. I have Bryce Young in that league. I have Brock Purdy in that league. I have Gardner Minshew in that league, who might be a starter this year. I don't know if we're going to talk about that, but
yeah.
Now I'm in that position where I got to make that decision. Do I trade one of those guys away or a couple of those guys away to beef up elsewhere? Or do I just hang on to the fact that I could have, you know, five potential starters and then trade them down the road? Or it makes for some fun decisions.
Which, speaking of which, you've got to say that France have come up trumps this offseason with their QB roster, because they have not been able to start two QBs for like most of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And held on to guys like Jacoby Brissett and Sam Darnold, who look like they're going to start the year as starting quarterbacks. Whether they make the end of the year is by the by. At least they now have elevated in value quite substantially, whereas 6 weeks ago that roster looked in flames.
Yeah, and they've had a very, very tough go, Team France, of with their quarterback situation. It's been like three straight years of them just really, really struggling. So it makes it kind of funny. And I think it was not them that has four of their quarterbacks all on the Browns now, because that's where guys signed. They had Jameis Winston and all these guys end up being Browns.
Yeah, they literally have all of them. They have Huntley, DTR, Watson, and Winston.
Yeah. Yeah, when he put that out to the group, I got a good chuckle out of that one, on top of all the other quarterback problems he's had over the last couple of years.
He's got the entire and like one of those guys is gonna have to get cut, right?
Yeah, for sure.
They're not gonna roster four.
Yeah,
so I love it. No, it's amazing. So but enough about our leagues, because people don't care about our leagues. We learned this. Let's talk a little bit around the free agency news, and I guess it segues nicely into the quarterbacks and what was, you know, it was a weak quarterback market. It was an extremely weak tight end market. And I didn't feel it was the strongest wide receiver market. Really, all the value was in this running back free agency market. In terms of prepping for the new season, how much stock should players, fantasy managers have on free agency moves? And when can they really start to project and think about what impact the last 2 weeks have had on rosters, both in the short term from a dynasty perspective, but then also the longer term from a just a redraft or best ball perspective?
I think we can pretty confidently say there aren't many free agents out there now that are going to impact rosters. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott, I guess, could land somewhere and potentially, you know, take half of a backfield like we saw him do, you know, last year in his final season in Dallas. I don't know how much he has left in the tank. He looked okay with the Patriots last season, but he's not going to be a workhorse starter anymore. So yeah, there's not really any guys from free agency now that are going to step into a spot in a depth chart and shake things up. But the draft is going to be the big one, right? And it's hard to predict. At the very top, we're starting to get a pretty good idea of how things are going to look. But overall, especially with the running backs, I know it's a weaker running back class this year, and maybe we'll talk about them later, but the second and third round running backs that get drafted this year in the NFL draft, they're going to change things for sure, right? We're going to see some guys land in some spots like the Chargers or the Cowboys backfield, where guys could step in. And even if they aren't, you know, premier prospects, if they get that volume, they could be significant fantasy assets this year. So I think the draft is the time that we're now going to have to watch and see if some of these guys like Zamir White can survive that, right? Is he going to be able to get through the second day of the draft without the Raiders bringing in somebody who's going to potentially compete with him or potentially just outright beat him for that job? So I do all the work. You know, last week I did multiple articles breaking everything down, my analysis, projections for all the players that signed with different teams. I'm giving people an idea. I've updated all my redraft rankings, my dynasty trade value charts and rankings, doing all the updates for that stuff now, with the caveat that I keep saying on our podcast, the Score Fantasy Football Podcast, that these things are going to change. Some of these situations are going to get, you know, shaken up a bit still when it comes to the draft. So I think you just got to keep an eye on it all off season long. I think in the past, a lot of people waited until the summer, until training camp came back around, and then tried to dive in. I think now we see a lot of people, and I'm just basing this on some of the numbers that I see with the podcast and my articles. People are following this all year long. People are still keeping that toe dipped in the fantasy water. And it's definitely, you know, best ball helps with that. Best ball comes around very early and people jump into those leagues and start to do those drafts. So I think it's a tricky thing to navigate when you still have the draft to come and, you know, what could change based on some of those high picks in the draft, stepping into some of these depth charts and some of these situations. But I think it's just something you got to pay attention to all offseason long, or at least as much as you can. Because even at this time of year, we were talking about it before the show, you know, I'm pulling back a little bit. I'm not going full bore throughout the off season like I am during the season. You know, during free agency, yes. During the draft week, yes. But overall, we're able to step back and kind of look at these situations and think about it a little bit deeper and do some deeper dives with articles and things like that. But yeah, it's a tough one to navigate when you still have the draft sitting out there. And a lot of these things, even stuff we're going to talk about today, could change. Yeah.
100%. And let's get a little bit into the running back class, because I think like the running back free agency class in particular, there was a lot of big names. So, you know, with a lot of movement, unprecedented, I think, movement as far back as I can remember. I can't remember this many top tier running backs hitting the market at the same time. And I think a lot of that had to do with the murmurings of the last year or 2 years of a lot of these guys have been standing and pounding the table, especially in the last 12 months. We've seen these guys pounding the table for more pay. We've had RB conferences over Zoom and things like that, if you follow and believe what has been reported. So it was interesting to me that a lot of these guys were willing to test the market. And you had a lot of guys coming off rookie deals. You had guys coming off franchise tag deals. So it earned significant money in the last 12 months and then wanted to effectively, I guess, cement their career money, because a lot of these guys, this is it now. This contract is the last payday. Yeah. They might get a small extension somewhere at the end, but most of these guys, Derrick Henry's probably not going to see too much more money in his future. Zach Moss probably isn't going to see too much more. Aaron Jones, I mean, 1 year deal, maybe he gets another one somewhere, but he's not got that many more left. So I guess the ones that really stood out, Saquon Barkley was always going to command the big sort of contract, but he was also going to demand the most attention. Him moving to the Eagles for me doesn't feel like, for fantasy football purposes, a huge positive move. I feel like if anything, at best, it's a sideways move for fantasy owners, but potentially an arrow down move.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think there's some give and take there with the Eagles offense. I think he's moving to a better offense where, you know, that can allow for longer drives and more scoring opportunities. Of course, the tush push situation, right? We just saw it so many times last year where DeAndre Swift was like visibly upset on the field. He would go down at like the 1 or 2 yard line and get up, and you just saw him go like, oh, like they're not going to give me a chance to knock this in, right? So that is for sure a problem for Barkley. I don't know that he's going to get as much receiving work. Is he going to see as many targets in that offense? I don't think so. But overall, being in a better offense, that's going to offset some of that stuff. And we know Barkley's the guy that can score from other places than just, you know, the 1 or 2 yard line. He doesn't need to be that goal line hammer, though it would help his fantasy stock if he was. So I still have him in that mid to low end RB1 range. But that's also, and this ties into some of the stuff we've talked about, because we're seeing a lot of running back situations where it's not these workhorse bell cow guys. There's not that many of them out there. And after a certain point, you have to start to pick these backs that are going to share their backfield with someone else. So that's kind of where the running back position is now, and whether that's factoring in the injury situations or, you know, teams just wanting to have the depth, like we're joking about with your dynasty quarterback situation, where they don't want to have that one guy that's the bell cow and then he goes down and now they don't have anybody of even remotely the same talent level behind him, right? So I think Barkley is going to be okay with the Eagles. I like him there. Is he going to be someone that I'm really targeting? Probably not. Like, I think he'll be fine this season, but it's going to all come down to where the ADP falls for these running backs, right? And where you're willing to actually take them. Because in the early rounds, if you're going to have to step up and take a Barkley and, you know, let's say the early or mid second round, I'm just not going to be willing to do that.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really interesting point. And one of the things I've actually been working on here for the playbook is I've actually written a piece, and I wrote a piece last year around the decline of fantasy running backs. And talking about it from the perspective of there isn't that many bell cow guys anymore. There isn't that many separators at the position. And I've run like a load of data over the last 11 years, right, to back this up. And this is a bit of a sneak preview. So if you're listening to this, then, you know, you're getting a bit of goods. If you looked at the peak period of running backs over, say, 2014 to 2019, there's an outlier in here in 2015 where all running backs were just really bad. Like the top scorer in fantasy football, I think, was Devonta Freeman. He got 321 PPR points. As the RB1. So it's a huge, like, 2015 was a huge, like, outlier where all running backs were kind of the same. There wasn't a big separator. But all future years, you know, the RB1 has been posting somewhere between 360 at the floor up to, like, 460. Which is Christian McCaffrey's huge outlier year as well. If you take that peak out, it tends to be somewhere between 360 and 390. There's a 411 in there. But then you look at the difference between what the average RB1 scores and the difference what an average RB2 scored. In that range, 2014, 98 points. 2016, 86 points. 2017, 94 points. 2018 was 108 points. 2019 was 91 points on average. So this is like the difference between what an RB1 would score you versus what an RB2 would score you, which is why you had to go up and get those guys. That there's a reason you're getting and spending a lot of these first round, early second round in draft picks on these guys, because they're making a significant difference. Having two of these guys, it's giving you a 70, 80 point bump over the field. So now, these numbers have been in steady decline. Last year was 62. So it's dropped off about 30, 40 points. It was a slight bump in 2022, but even 2021 was 68. So there's been this trend, and it factors into like their average yardage from scrimmage. You know, last year was the lowest running back average yardage from scrimmage since 2015, which I talked about that really down year. 1380 yards from scrimmage was the average. Touches, though, is where it all is. You know, consistently running backs were getting 300 touches, and now they're touching 270. That's the average. So it's because of what you're saying. These guys are, they're not interested in having bell cows anymore. You're getting guys that they're on pitch count. Everyone's on a pitch count. We've even heard noises this offseason that Travis Etienne is going to be on a count effectively for the season. They want to reduce his workload for higher productivity. They want to see backs do more with less.
And there's some teams that say that, and then, like Travis said last year, where they say that, and then based on the talent level of some of the other running backs on the team, it doesn't necessarily happen always like that. And this year in free agency, I mean, there were only a couple guys that signed with new teams that I think even have a chance to be the bell cow guy. Now, Barkley is one of them. But I don't know that we're going to see him, you know, get the Eagles have been fairly smart about working in some other guys a little bit, whether it be, you know, Kenny Gainwell or some of the other backs that they've had there over time. I think we'll see that with him. But even Josh Jacobs, who initially my projection was going to be, you know, very, very high for him, the Green Bay Packers end up bringing back AJ Dillon. And I don't know that Dillon is necessarily, you know, the guy that fantasy managers thought he was going to be, right? He's more of a name than he is actually a fantasy producer at this point, but he's somebody who could factor into some of those touches and maybe take a little bit away from Jacobs. Like we saw Aaron Jones get a lot of his touches taken away or even drives fully taken away by AJ Dillon. So I'm not sure if I'm cutting you off there, if you got more to provide. It's interesting to think about, even though we did see a lot of these contracts for running backs in those first few days last week, that when you really look at some of these guys, there's not too many that have a shot to be that kind of bell cow.
No, and I think that, you know, people need to get in their head. I said, I think about a year, 2 years ago, I can't quite remember, but I said, you get these cycles with the running back position in the NFL. When I first was getting into the business of playing fantasy football, you had big bell cow guys, your Priest Holmes, Damian Tomlinson. You had load of guys who were really sort of big, heavy workload that were really inventing the position. And then you got to that sort of late 2000s, early 2010s, and it became more this committee style football. You had a load of just guys who would just plod together and would be, you know, be team running backs effectively first. And then you had Adrian Peterson break that mold, and then you had Jamal Charles break that mold. And then eventually we started seeing the value of talent at the position. But I think now it's pivoted almost back to where we were, but for a different reason. Whereas I think in 2008, 2009, 2010, those draft classes weren't really stocked with fantasy or just with talented running backs. Good running backs make a living running backs, but none of these sort of quote-unquote generational running backs. Now you've got running backs that have come out the last few years. You've had a lot of exceptional running backs, Barkley, Travis Etienne, but Christian McCaffrey a few years before that, Leonard Fournette a few years before that. You had a lot of real difference makers at the position. This year is going to be interesting because there isn't that elite productivity. There's still guys who are going to come in and they're going to be fantasy relevant. But we're at this point now where we're almost plateauing off because the money's not there like it was. Those guys like the Damian Tomlinson, Priest Holmes, those guys got paid. It was aspirational to be a running back. And then they're not getting paid. So running backs in late high school, early college are converting to other positions, wide receiver, defensive positions, because that's where the money is. If they're good enough and they've got the talent ability, they are pivoting away from those positions. And I think we might see a lull over the next couple of years of running backs where they think, well, there's no money being a running back. It's a short career. I'm going to go into the NFL. I'm going to make at best $20, $25 million. Whereas actually, if you can be a decent special teamer, you'll earn that, but without having to do the work.
I think that's going to continue over time, over the next few years, over the next decade or so. We'll see that come into play more. I think right now, like this year, one of the reasons, and I agree with you that it was exciting to see all these runs.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Running backs sign deals, even though they're not, massive deals, and you see secondary or number three receivers get the kind of money that some of the top backs get. But the fact that these guys signed so early, that there was that frenzy to get them, and that it didn't play out like it has in years past, where they just sit out there for months sometimes before they sign with anyone, that might be telling about what the league thinks about this running back draft class coming out. That, because it's not the strongest class, people don't want to wait and see if they can get one of these guys, or maybe there's only one or two that they actually like in the class. And if they don't get them, then they're going to be out of options. They needed to lock some guys down here. And then also a couple teams just had money to spend, right? Like the DeAndre Swift contract, people can get mad about it, but the Bears had a lot of money to spend. And I don't think that's really going to make too much of an impact that they gave him a little more money. And yes, Swift is slightly better than what they had there. I think the Bears have told us what they think about Khalil Herbert, that they just don't trust him. He's a nice piece, but he's a depth guy. He is not somebody that they want to be the starter. And it's unfortunate for Roschon Johnson, but Roschon Johnson, again, not like an elite prospect coming out, and a guy who is pretty good in special teams, a guy who's good in pass protection. He can kind of help Swift out there, but they needed a guy who could step in and give them something more. And I think Swift can, even though he's going away from an Eagles offensive line that really helped build some holes for him last season. And now he's going to go to the Bears, where that's going to be a little more difficult to do. But I like what the Bears offense is building. And I think Swift could be a little bit underrated in terms of what he can do for fantasy this season, just based on the fact that if Caleb Williams can get in there with the receiving talent that they have around him now, and maybe they can add a little bit to that offensive line in the draft, all of a sudden it could be a pretty exciting offense. It could be an offense that's scoring more than we've seen in years past. And DeAndre Swift could find his path to RB1 or RB2, sorry, fantasy production. I don't think he'll get up into the RB1 range, but could end up being a top 15, top 20 back again, and a guy that you're going to be able to get a lot cheaper than those top backs in fantasy drafts.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think the difference, I think, for me as well, when you're looking at these guys, especially Swift, the big question around Swift is going to be his health. First two seasons in the league, he barely played because of those injuries. He actually looked good last year, but he did look like he'd lost a little bit of that acceleration that he had coming into the league as an impact. But he's still a quick player. He's still, I'm not saying he's done, but there's definitely like he's lost a small fraction there. My only worry with him at the, so I would think now that the NFL, and in particular the Houston Texans, have demonstrated to me how you should let a rookie quarterback play when your expectation is zero. And that is, you send your, and I love this from their coaching staff, they sent out CJ Stroud and they went, you know what? Whatever you do this year, this is your training year. Get acclimatized to the league. Throw the ball 50 times a game. You make mistakes, that's fine. That's what you're going to do. You're going to make them. Get yourself comfortable. Throw the ball a ton. Get familiar. Make the plays. You make mistakes, you get picked off. And he didn't get picked off because he was given the confidence by the coaching staff to say, we're going to let you throw the ball 50 times a game because we're not necessarily, I don't want to say bothered, but we know you're going to go out there. He didn't walk in with that same pressure that I feel like Bryce Young had. They traded up for Bryce Young. They paid a steep, steep price for Bryce Young. And that price tag weighed on that kid. It weighed on him so much. And you could see it. And there was nothing that the Texans, and if you looked at those rosters at the start of the season, there wasn't that much to really split between them when you look at talent. It was just philosophy, belief, and the way that they set out with a plan.
I think that's what we thought going into the season.
That's what I mean.
As it played out, hindsight's 20/20. Having Nico Collins and Tank Dell step up, and you know, Stroud was a big part of that, of course.
Yeah.
But the offensive line for the Texans ended up, that was much better than the Panthers' offensive line. The receiving core was much better. You know, even a guy like Devin Singletary ended up being a much better back than what the Panthers were trotting out there last year. And then the coaching staff, I mean, Bobby Slowick ends up being a fantastic offensive coordinator and a guy that I think really helped that offense as well. Now this year, I'm actually really excited, and it ties into this. I'm really excited to see what Dave Canales can do with that Panthers offense, because we've seen him take guys like Geno Smith with the Seahawks 2 years ago and Baker Mayfield with the Bucks last year and really help these offenses produce. I think he is going to be amazing for Bryce Young. And I like, you know, the Deontay Johnson trade, I think is a great move for them, giving him a guy that actually can get open, you know, a novel thought, right? Why don't we get a receiver that can actually create some separation and get open for our young quarterback and give him a chance. So I think that it's going to be exciting to see what the Panthers can do this year. But I kind of disagree. I kind of feel like, in hindsight, and like I said, before the season last year, I would have thought, well, the situations are kind of similar. But then as it played out, it was pretty clear that top to bottom that the Texans had a better coaching staff, loved DeMeco Ryans. I mean, had a better team culture there that they were building and had better around him than what Bryce Young was dealing with. But even to see the Panthers go out and even signing sort of shorter interior offensive linemen to help Bryce Young, like that is a very smart thing to do. That shows that I think they're going to be a lot better off in the Dave Canales year than they were last year.
And I think that's where I was getting at. It's culture, it's coaching, you know, it's not about having the best guys necessarily on paper, because people look at the situation, they see rosters on paper and think they're stacked, they should be doing better. And it is that. It's once I think you set an expectation and tone, and the where the Texans got this 100% spot on was, we're going to do our thing. Forget the noise. They almost put a wall up around everything and went, we're doing our thing. What happens, happens. And everyone bought in. And the Panthers haven't done that for years. What I think is interesting, I'm going to slightly counter you on Dave Canellis. I think Dave Canellis has been fortunate in the situations he has been in. And I'm not saying he hasn't done a good job, but I think he's coming in. He has set a pressure now, or he is going to feel the pressure of being a quarterback fixer because of what has just transpired. Now, he transpired a situation where they traded Russell Wilson in Seattle and he gets Geno Smith. And what he did is he simplified that offense and gave Geno a lot of opportunities to make plays that were very straightforward. Not easy, but easier than perhaps what the previous playbook was. In Tampa, I think where with Baker Mayfield, and listen, Baker Mayfield massively proved me wrong last year, but where I think that Dave Canella's got a little bit too much credit was this whole piece of he elevated that offense significantly. And actually, I'm not so sure that he did. I think people just thought that that offense, under Byron Leftwich, the play calling under Byron Leftwich was so poor that Tom Brady was basically coaching the guys on the field and calling more audibles than we've probably ever seen a quarterback call. And I think last season they brought in a playbook that made sense and they played to the plan. The questions I have around Canellis is, in both those situations, the run game is poor in both games. Even the Buccaneers, Rashad White had a good year because he was good at receiving and made some plays. But that offense line was pretty good, but they struggled. Rashad White, what did he finish with? 3.6 yards per carry? Like, they struggled to get the run. He established the run more than he did his predecessor, which is great. The same thing happened with the Seahawks 2 years previously. And I think Canellis, I think it's good that he has plans and he's going to definitely make Bryce Young more comfortable. My query is, if that team can't run the football and they're still at this point, are going to be relying on Miles Sanders to do this, as they haven't.
I think the way that they've talked, it really seems like they're going to go with Chuba Hubbard. Like last year down the stretch, it was all Chuba Hubbard. And in the off season, even Canellis, like the way that they've talked about Hubbard, it seems like right now he's the guy at the top of the depth chart. Will they draft somebody? Probably. I would think that they'll bring somebody else in, but I don't know. They definitely soured on Miles Sanders last year. I don't think he's going to be the guy.
No, he might not be, but I don't think Chuba Hubbard should be the guy either. I think that's, we're at this stage where, yes, they're making some moves that definitely seem offensive. I think for me, what I want to see from Canellis, if I'm sitting there hoping he does a good job, is bring this culture of togetherness, shutting the noise out. But the big thing he's going to have to deal with is shut the expectations of the owner out, because ownership have interfered with that franchise far too much. I mean, the Frank Wright situation was, I mean, Frank Wright's a good coach. He's always been a good coach. He's demonstrated how good a coach he's been. For that situation not to have panned out, there's something more than just the fact he became a bad coach overnight. And I think Canellis, does he have that ability to stand up to ownership and say, leave me alone, I'm going to manage the team, judge me on the results? Because that's the one thing that Canellis seems like a nice guy. I watched him a lot last year in Tampa. I don't know if he's got that little bit of steel that's going to keep the Wolves at bay.
Well, I think one thing to help with your argument, because I don't necessarily agree with all of that. I'm not too worried about the run game for the Panthers. I'm more concerned, and what we're talking about more is the Bryce Young situation. But looking at what he had to deal with in the Seahawks, you're helping rebuild Geno Smith, but you also have a pretty good receiving core there, right? You had DK Metcalf, you had Tyler Lockett, you had some pretty good receivers last year with the Bucks. Two great receivers again, right? So the fact that they go out and get Deontay Johnson, awesome. Now you got one receiver that you can rely on, I think. Now I think in the draft, they're going to have to try to find and hit on somebody else that can come in and help, or all of a sudden get something out of a Jonathan Mingo, which I think that was one of my worst draft calls last year. I thought Mingo could be the guy there. Clearly didn't happen. Kind of looked pretty slow on the field, to be honest. So hopefully if he can do the thing that you're talking about and kind of simplify the offense for everybody, because that is one of the things that they've said was a problem last year. If they can simplify things, maybe they can start to get a little more out of those young players. Maybe they were too much in their own heads last year. And hopefully they can just get past this. We traded everything to get that number one pick. And I think that was part of the thing that was going on behind the scenes last year, that it seems like the owner was heavily involved with that pick. And then I think you had a lot of turmoil behind the scenes where people were probably disgruntled about, you know, what had happened. And, you know, I think that led to probably a lot of fighting and chaos behind the scenes. Now you have this new coaching staff in there. You have a guy that, in my mind, has proven himself that he can go to two different spots and help these quarterbacks have really good seasons and sort of revitalize or kickstart their careers. Can he do that with a guy that was talented enough a year ago to go, you know, 101 overall?
Uncontested, by the way. Uncontested 101. There wasn't anyone here that thought that he was not the 101.
There were some, I know there were some analysts that thought CJ Stroud belonged in that conversation. But yeah, I thought it was Bryce Young, and I still think Bryce Young is going to have a good career. And I think Canales is going to help him. I'm very excited to see what they can do in that offense. And I will agree with you with the run game on one thing. I think they got to try to get somebody else in there to kind of help. You can have Chuba Hubbard as a piece in the backfield, but if you're going into the season with Chuba Hubbard as the starter and with Miles Sanders as the backup, I think you're probably doing a disservice. And I think they're smart enough to know that.
And I think they need a tight end. I think they're going to need a tight end who's going to be able to create some space, because they haven't got a record tight end. They haven't for a few years, probably since Olsen retired, really. They need to have someone who's going to create an extra lane. They need to use the short yardage underneath.
If only they had a lot of draft picks to fill all these holes. If only they had cash.
I don't know why they haven't. So, like, for me, like, I think someone like, I mean, to be honest, Colby Parkinson at tight end pretty much blew the tight end market out of the water. So probably not, but they need to get a big tight end, almost like a Drew Sample type tight end, who is just going to be a game wrecker in creating additional space, because that offensive line is not great.
You yeah, do I mean, that tight end wise right now. What is it? Logan Thomas.
And that's it.
Not really anybody else out there. And like you said, it was kind of a weak tight end group to begin with. And they certainly don't have the draft capital to get, you know, any of the, I mean, there's really, you know, one standout tight end in this class, but you know, they're going to have to hit on somebody later in the draft if they're planning on bringing a guy in. And then that leads you to the whole, will that person be able to actually step in and contribute if they're not, you know, an elite prospect? And, it is going to be tricky, and it makes it hard, you know, on the offense if they can't get much out of that tight end spot.
Well, then I think if they can, and they've still got Adam Thielen on that roster, if they can get Adam Thielen playing, I almost think Adam Thielen now needs to play what Chris Godwin did last year, that short intermediate routes, kind of over the middle. He's got enough experience. You got to give Bryce Young easy targets underneath. What you will see from Canales is some screens. You'll see a lot of end arounds. You'll see a lot of switches. They'll find ways to get. The only problem I think they have, they're going to need a bit of a speedster at receiver, which I think is what they might try and target. They need to find someone who's not necessarily going to blow it up over the top, but who's going to be able to be athletic enough to do some of those creative short throws for big gains, which is what I think they're lacking. And, you know, like Godwin was able to get a 1 yard pass and take it 8 yards, for example. You know, that's the kind of guy. Thielen isn't going to do that because he is on his last hurrah in the NFL. Deontay Johnson, you need him on the outside because you need a guy who can get open. So they need to find a receiver who in there. And I'm trying to think who they had. I'm trying to get the receiver they had on their books, not last year, but the year before, who fit this profile perfectly.
I thought you were going to say DJ Chark.
No. I'm looking right now.
There isn't really a guy that's going to make a huge difference for them, I don't think.
No, he's not on the roster anymore.
I'm looking at like the free agent market still. If there's somebody that they could try to go out there and get, like the names out there are not that exciting, right? It's kind of guys that are sort of at the end of their career, guys that haven't really produced in other spots, like a Marcus Valdes-Scantling, somebody that can help stretch the field, but no one's really too scared of what he's going to do out there. So, yeah, it makes it tricky, puts a lot of pressure on the draft for them, and the fact that they don't have the high picks to do anything about it, it makes it even tougher.
Yeah, so I think it's one of these work in progresses, but we'll see what they do. If you had to take the running back, and we'll sort of leave free agency here in with just this question, with the running backs in this free agency class, which of these names do you look at from free agency and think they're going to take a significant step forward and can potentially knock on the door of, say, top 15, top 12?
Rankings?
And which one of these is going to be the one that you're most concerned about in terms of path for them returning on ADP?
So I think Josh Jacobs is the one that intrigues me the most in terms of like how high he could actually get. Like if AJ Dillon isn't, you know, taking on the role that he has in the past, if that was more to do with Aaron Jones's age and, you know, them thinking at the time that Dillon was going to be the guy who could take over for Jones and all that sort of stuff. Now, I don't feel like the Packers feel that way. The contract that they gave him isn't significant. They could even cut him before the season, to be honest. Like, they didn't make any sort of big investment to keep him around. He lingered out there for a while. He saw what else was out there and he went back sort of hat in hand to the Packers and took what he could get. So I think there's a good chance based on the money that they gave to Jacobs and based on what we've seen Jacobs do in that Raiders offense that he could step into this young, exciting Packers offense, get a ton of volume, and actually put up really, really good fantasy numbers. Like, I know there's questions about the efficiency metrics, but he's also going from a Raiders offense that a lot of question marks about that Raiders offense the last few years to now. I think we're all pretty excited about this Packers offense and the young receivers and everything that they have there. And Jordan Love looking pretty good. And so I'm pretty interested in Josh Jacobs. Again, we'll see where the ADPs settle as we get kind of, you know, closer to the draft and closer to actual fantasy drafts. But he's the guy that I think has the highest ceiling. Barkley, not overly excited, but I think he still could sneak into that low end RB1 range. A guy that he factors into free agency, I guess, is Joe Mixon. He's somebody that I did not expect to be touting at all. And yet him landing in that situation with the Texans, where we've seen them last year giving their lead back a lot of touches, Devin Singletary putting up pretty solid RB2 fantasy stats down the stretch, I think Mixon could get it done there for them. So that one is kind of interesting to me. I've pushed him up into pretty close, if not inside of that top 15. Even though he wasn't a free agent, but all the movement with him and the trade kind of happened right in that same week with everybody. Derrick Henry, the landing spot kind of keeps me interested. He's a guy that I'm just waiting for the wheels to fall off, but going to that Ravens offense, you look at what Gus Edwards did there last year. What was it? 12, 13 rushing touchdowns that he had overall, the running backs, 20 rushing touchdowns for that Ravens backfield. And that's not counting the 5 that Lamar Jackson ran in. So there's such an opportunity there for him that even if the yardage isn't as big as it has been, even if he suffers an injury here and there, when he's out on that field, he is going to be able to score a lot. And I like that spot for him. So based on the landing spot, I'm a little more in on Henry than I was in the past.
I love it because, you know, who's he got behind him? Keaton Mitchell? Keaton Mitchell can't stay.
Coming out. Off an ACL tear, right? Like, what's he going to be able to do next season? Will he be able to hit the ground running and will he be able to regain his form? We can't just assume that these guys with serious knee injuries are going to come back and just step right in, especially when it's a young player who's a speed-based running back. Could take a little longer for him to get back. So those are some of the guys that I'm excited about. Zach Moss, another massive riser. We didn't know for sure if he was going to get a starting role anywhere. I thought he'd probably end up signing somewhere as really like an overqualified backup. And yet he ends up in Cincinnati in a really good offense where he's going to be the early down guy. He's probably going to be the goal line guy. And yeah, Chase Brown is going to factor in as well. But Zach Moss has a chance to flirt with low-end RB2 or at least high-end RB3 fantasy stats. So that's another guy that really, you know, cranked up in my rankings over the last week or so when I was doing updates. In terms of like who I'm worried about, I think we can't, as much as he's somebody that I have talked about a lot over the last few years, who I think is underrated, we can't just assume that Devin Singletary is going to be the Giants' lead back. He's got to be another one of these guys that we're going to worry. Can he survive the draft? Are they going to take somebody? I think they're going to bring somebody else in to either pair with him or potentially overtake him. So he's a guy that I'd be worried about. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think Austin Eckler's probably the low-hanging fruit to say here. And you look at the contract that he got, not anything significant to last year. People want to blame it on the injuries. I think he's just sort of in that decline phase now in his career. And yeah, not somebody that I'm going to be looking to take. I think they still like Brian Robinson there, and Brian Robinson's going to get a lot of the goal line opportunities. So Eckler's just going to be a glorified kind of Antonio Gibson, what he was in offense. And yeah, I don't think that's something. I think you really have to, especially this time of year when you're looking ahead to the next season, try to figure out what is going to change significantly and start to take the value away from some of those guys who've been those big names, who've produced in the past, and yet their situation is now changing, and you can't just assume that they're going to keep going. And if you're talking about dynasty, you try to capitalize on that name value right now. If you can get something for those guys before everyone starts to realize, or before the draft comes around and all of a sudden a Devin Singletary loses his value because they bring in one of the rookie running backs, I think you got to start to make those moves now.
Yeah. And I'm 100% with you there. And I think the other part of that is, you look at these guys who haven't got a lot of money behind the line that can go quite quickly. You know, Austin Eckler's got $4 million. That doesn't even guarantee him a roster spot in the 52. If he's really out of 53, if he's out of juice, he's going to go. They're not going to hold him. There's not enough money to keep him on that roster. Zach Moss is a bit of the same. Like, I love that situation, but he's $3 million guaranteed. If they fall in love and the right situation comes along in the draft, they might hold on to him because the money is so team friendly, but they might not. They, like, I look at some of the numbers on these guys and think, they're not on money that means that they're guaranteed to remain on their teams for a significant amount of time. The one that intrigues me, we haven't really talked about that much, is Gus Edwards. He had a great season last year. He lands into a great offense, pretty uncontested. Yes, he's got to survive the draft, but they're not taking an RB in round one, and I doubt they're going to take one in round two because they've got so many other holes they need to look at. So he's probably going to be competing against a mid-day two guy, a round three or better guy. I think Gus Edwards here is probably the steal of all these guys from someone who could legitimately threaten the top 15 just because the guys underneath him haven't got any juice. Like, they've not shown to have any juice.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think he's an intriguing guy to look at right now. I think he'll still be in some sort of committee, but depending on who the other player is, there's no saying whether he could be the hammer in that committee. And that's a run game with Greg Roman there that they obviously want to pound the ball with all the moves that they've made. It seems like they're investing in trying to run the ball, whether it be bringing in, you know, blocking tight ends like Will Disley and moving on, of course, from the receivers. It certainly seems like they're setting up that they're going to try to run the ball there. And Gus Edwards, if he just ends up as the goal line back in that offense, there will be some value. So, yeah, I like him. I don't think we're going to end all of this with Gus Edwards being the starter, but there's a possibility that that could happen, like you said, if they don't end up getting a running back high in the draft, or if that guy just doesn't pan out, right? We can't just assume because they invest in one of these backs in the draft that that guy's going to take over. Maybe that guy comes in out of shape and all of a sudden this is going to be the Gus Edwards show. So yeah, I like that call by you.
Yeah. What about, just quickly before I let you go, Tony Pollard? A lot has been made of his landing spot with the Titans, with Tarjay Spears. A lot of Tarjay Spears truthers, owners, are disappointed with this. What is your initial take on this? And can Pollard pull enough away from Spears to be high-end RB2, or are we looking at two guys here that you almost want to fade in most formats for next season?
I don't know. Like, that Titans offense to me, I love everything that that team is doing with the exception of what they have at quarterback. I do not believe that Will Levis is the guy there. And I think that's ultimately going to be what holds back that offense. They tried to help out in the offensive line by bringing in some additions there. I'm sure they're not done. That's an area that they got to continue to address. But the receiving core is solid. You have a nice pass-catching tight end in Chigakonkwo. And I love, like, the fact that they bring over Brian Callahan. Like, I think he is going to be such an upgrade. There's a few situations like this where we're seeing an offensive mind come in and just completely change what that team is going to look like in terms of, you know, the way I'm going to have to project it in terms of, you know, how many passing attempts they're going to have next year. That is going to go way up. And the moves that they've made prove that, because you get two backs that are sort of interchangeable, two backs that are explosive and they're pass catching threats. And that's the problem for Spears. Now he doesn't have that defined role like he had with Henry. Now it's going to be just a straight on competition between these two. And here's the thing. I actually think it benefits both of them to not be a workhorse or a bell cow in this situation. We saw Tony Pollard coming off the injury last year and really wasn't the same player, wasn't as explosive as what we saw in those last couple of years when he was splitting the backfield with Zeke. So I think it's good for him that you could put him with a guy like Spears and now have a, whether it's 55-45 or 60-40, it will be in Pollard's favor, I believe. And I think we could see Pollard get back to a little more of what we saw from before. To me, that's low-end RB2. I don't know that we're going to see much more than that, because I don't know overall that that offense is going to be able to take a complete step into another stratosphere. And again, that's because the quarterback situation in my mind, but I think there's still going to be value with both these guys. I think Spears will have value as an RB3 flex and a guy that if something happens to Pollard can step up and really blow up like we expected that he might before Pollard signed there. But right now that's kind of how I'm valuing them, and just we'll see where their ADPs fall for whether we want to actually invest in that or not. I don't think the ceiling is going to be there for either of them, though. If that's your ultimate question, I don't think that Pollard is going to get anywhere near, you know, top 15, top 10. I don't think he's going to be anywhere near that from what I'm expecting from this offense, which is that Spears is still going to be significantly involved.
Yeah, I almost think I'm looking at that Titans offense for fantasy football, and I actually don't see me owning any of it next year.
That's
in redraft.
Yeah. That's as much as I think Ridley is going to be the number one there over Hopkins. And, you know, I like some of the things they've said that they could unlock him a little more based on the quarterback situation. Now we're going to spread targets out. Even if the targets go up, I just don't know there's going to be anybody that's consistently producing. Yeah, I agree.
Chig might be the only one because he'd be free. I might buy in on some Chig late in drafts, because he'll be essentially free. And with that Brian Callahan offense, which you've mentioned, I think there might be a sprinkle in the path to him having some bumper streamer weeks that could be useful. But yeah, I can't see me owning any of that offense at all. I just think, and it's not against the coaching staff at all, far from it. I think they're just going to spread the ball around. I think they're going to mitigate risk. I think they know the limitations with Levis. I think they're going to just put him in spots where he can't fail, but at the same point, he's not going to shoot the lights out. And I think you're going to see a 3,000-yard season, low 20 touchdowns, some interceptions, and he'll play okay, but he'll be quarterback 20, 22, and he won't be able to sustain that volume for Ridley and Hopkins. That's kind of my feeling on it. And then you got two running backs that will cannibalize each other. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be in on the Titans all that much this year.
I think Tennessee is going to be in the quarterback market this time next year.
Yeah, I think they have to be. And actually, I don't hate that for them in terms of even rolling Levis for the next two. Even if they roll with Levis for the next two seasons, I think you go for that quarterback when you're in the position where you've built the other pieces. They've still got a lot of work to do on the defensive line. They've got some work they've got to do at the back end of that defense as well. So I think, you know, they can really invest in the lines. They can invest in the secondary, they can invest in the cornerbacks here. They've made some really nice moves on offense to put playmakers in place. You're going to have to replace Nuke Hopkins probably in that window as well, because I don't think he's going to grow more than another two. So you're going to have to find a complimentary piece for Ridley in the next 2 years anyway. And then I think you go and get your quarterback. And then they'll actually be in a really good spot in 24 months' time if they do that.
We haven't really heard any talk of it, but I even wonder where Hopkins' mind is at right now, whether he even wants to stick around this season, or could we see him get moved before the year, just based on the fact that you figure that he wants to maybe chase a ring, right? Like, I don't know that Tennessee's going to give him that opportunity, but yeah, we'll see how that works out.
I don't think he can move. I'm just pulling up the contract. I don't think he's going to be
too locked in.
I think he's too locked in. The contract details say that this year he's on for 18 mil this year.
Yeah.
But having said that, yeah, so his base is, yeah, base roster bonus is just too high. He's in at 12.6 workout. He's in for 14. He's in for 14 mil plus a 2.35 miscellaneous, which is down on receptions, receiving, and annual touchdown incentives. So 14 with incentives is what he's going to cost a team against the cap this year. I can't see a team paying that's a contender. Unless they lose a receiver right at the start of the season, that's the only hope I think he moves. There's a lot of money they're going to have to eat.
Probably.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting. But we've gone over time, as I guess you and I always do. Why don't you tell everyone what you're going to be working on up until the draft and where they can start getting access to some of your amazing content and find the podcast and everything else and where they can get in touch with you if they've got any follow-up questions.
Well, all my content is available for free over at The Score. You can download The Score app, go to thescore.com, though I highly recommend the app. Everything on there, not just my fantasy content, but everything on there is so efficient. The box scores are the best in the industry. So I definitely recommend giving that a try. And the bonus is that you get all my content on there for free as well, including my draft kit, which will come out post the NFL draft. We'll start to put content out for that. But in the meantime, lots of draft prep, lots of preview episodes over at the Score Fantasy Football Podcast that I mentioned earlier. I'll be tweeting out lots of links to my content on Twitter at Justin Boone on there. So it's a fun time of year. Like I said, you and I were talking, we get to kind of take a bit of a step back right now and kind of enjoy ourselves, you know, between now and once we get closer to the draft, it'll ramp back up. And then before you know it, once that draft happens, then it's all hands on deck to get ready for the season. And those months just generating as much content as we possibly can through May and June and into July and the summer, and the season will be back. And, you know, I can't wait. It's so much fun. I love taking, you know, after Super Bowl, I take a few weeks off and then you come back for free agency. And that really just gets the blood flowing again and gets you really excited as we see everything just get shaken up and changed. And we try to react to where the pieces are falling, and we'll do it again come the draft.
And you can gear up for another trip to Pittsburgh.
Which we talked about before the show. Yeah.
get your reunion trip to Pittsburgh booked in. Absolutely.
It's a great city.
It is. It's been a great pleasure having you on. Always appreciate it, my man. I'm looking forward to pushing you down the rankings again in the Dynasty League this year. I know you're rebuilding coming strong. It's strong fighting talk that is all bluff, though, and actually has nothing to back it up. But it's great fun, as you say. Rush Nation, hope you've enjoyed this. Give Justin a follow. Like you said, all his content is free. It's incredible. He's proven over the years he's one of the, if not the most accurate fantasy analyst out there. So if you're not looking at The Score, if you're not looking at his draft kit, you're missing a trick. So make sure you check out his content, his podcast, everything that he's doing. He's one of the sharpest out there. That's why I'm glad that he is here and sharing his knowledge. Appreciate you as always. And don't forget, Rush Nation, we will be back next week with more fun, more shenanigans as we're gearing up to the NFL draft. But don't forget, as always, Rush Nation, keep rushing.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.